This is a Capricorn FM podcast.
This progressive talk on Capricorn FM, it's now 14 minutes before 8 o'clock and we're speaking progressive. I did say that towards the end we'll have a conversation. We'll be reviewing the book Reflections of a Convoluted Mind, A Journey with My Mental Illness. And that is Dr. Samke Ngobo's journey, who authored this book. And we're going to be talking to Dr. Ngobo. Dr. Ngobo, good evening. Welcome to Progressive Talk.
Thank you very much. Good evening to you and good evening to the listeners.
Good evening. Good evening. So when I was reading your book and I went through it, I found different parts of it very striking. But I'll start generally. So when you say reflections of a convoluted mind, let's start there. What are you talking about there?
When I speak of reflections of a convoluted mind, it's discussing basically my mind and how my one's thinking is when they're mentally unwell. So I chose the title convoluted because when something is convoluted, it's intertwined, it seems like something that's very mixed up and not understood. So I thought I'd use words which seem like they're opposites by saying reflections of a convoluted mind, because one may ask, how does a mind that's convoluted and confused reflect in any way? But I just thought that because there's such a stigma towards people with mental illnesses, let me speak as that person and show that they can be sense and they can be understanding about issues related to the mind, and as somebody who's experienced issues related to a mental illness. Hence the title, Reflections of a Convoluted Mind.
And in your case, when did you discover that you were living with a mental illness?
I was diagnosed with a mental illness many years ago. I was diagnosed in 2001. At that time, I was 14 years of age. And I wouldn't say that I discovered that I have a mental illness, because when you're in that state, you're unaware at times that there's something wrong, especially since I was so young at the time. So I just found myself having landed myself in hospital. I was so confused. If you can just think, it's 2001. It wasn't as spoken about as it is now. So it was very little understanding as to what is going on with me. And no one could really explain to me what had happened to me. But fortunately, my parents were very proactive in taking me to hospital to seek the necessary care. So I was diagnosed at the age of 14. I was in grade 9 at the time. And I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Even though I was told only later that it's bipolar, I was just told that I have a mood disorder.
And you went through high school, you went to tertiary, you became a doctor. How was that journey?
It was not a smooth journey at all. It sounds very, straightforward and obvious, as one may think. Dr. Ngobo has written a book as if it was a very straightforward journey, and it was nothing close to that.
Yeah.
It was a journey that was very chaotic at times. I had my first, diagnosis when I was 14, and I became ill very briefly at the time. And then I continued my schooling career. And then when it came to university, when I applied to be, to study medicine, it became very challenging because there were many things that were very stressful at the time in my life. And there was also that element of denial about my diagnosis. So because I was not accepting the fact that I have a mental illness and seeing patients who, were struggling with the same thing, I couldn't identify with them that, what they have is what I have. I felt that I was different to patients in that time. So I would relapse time and time again because I just would not accept the fact that I have this diagnosis. So my schooling, my academic life was impacted, but by the grace of God, I did manage to finish medical school, and it made me have a greater resolve to, continue with my career and also try and help others with the same challenge.
When you talk about relapsing, when I read in the book, there are two stories that struck me, that you related. There's a story where you say you'd be driving on the road and you thought all the billboards will be talking to you. You'd be listening to the radio and you thought the person speaking on the radio will be relating your story or talking to you, or giving you a message, as it was. And the driving on the road, you could have had an accident because you were thought you were being chased. You would mix up your car. You would use your salary or your credit card even before your salary comes in, and therefore you were not able to meet your monthly commitments. Maybe just to briefly share with us those on the relapses.
Yes, it's a very devastating condition. A mental illness is very devastating in any form, whether it's depression, whether it's schizophrenia, whether it's bipolar. So what you're describing there and what I was mentioning in the book are the manic episode when I have elevated mood, irritable mood, and I was very impulsive at the time. So when I was in that state, any sense of reasoning is not there. You feel on top of the world, you feel you have all this money. And this is just because of the delusion, you know, a fixed false belief, basically. Mm. So I recall I had several relapses, like I mentioned, but one of those ones that I remember so freshly was in 2013. I woke up in the morning at about 5 in the morning. And in my mind, I felt I was being chased. So here I was, I get into my car and I was seeing, you know, I was driving across the road, crisscrossing the road and at high speed. I felt like somebody was chasing me. And in that state of mind, I was not in my right frame of mind, and it's a dangerous place at the time. And it's only in hindsight where you realize the danger that you're in at the time, because when you're in that mindset, you yourself believe that this is a reality to you. You genuinely believe that somebody is chasing you, and that's what I felt at the time. Mm-hmm. And at other times, one of my relapses, I believed that I'm the wealthiest person in the world. And so here I was going into the shops, going in, swiping my cards. And if you are well-dressed, well-presented, mm-hmm. you can't turn around a week later after having bought these unjustified things, and then you come around and you say, oh, sorry, you know what, I wasn't well, because you're speaking sense, it's your card, no one has stolen your card from you. Mm. So it just goes to show the financial implications of having a manic episode and a bipolar mood disorder as well. So it had very devastating consequences. And also, besides the manic episode, it was a psychotic episode where I felt I was being chased, where, you know, you lose touch with reality completely. And it is a very dangerous position to be in.
So you also state that you've had, for the larger part of your life, had the opportunity to be treated in public, in private hospitals, and then at some stage, because of everything that happened and the impact of the illness, you went to a public hospital. And please relate there, because you say the treatment there just made you worse in a public hospital.
That definitely was my experience. And I just want to just outline the fact that it's not that every state hospital has, you know, terrible treatment. It was this particular one that I was in, because I have worked in mental health. Mm. And even though the conditions might not be as ideal in terms of the aesthetics in private and in public, but it was this particular hospital that I was in that I found to have treated me less than what I would have wanted to have felt as a patient. And I knew the difference, because I had the luxury of private healthcare, and I myself, having worked in the government sector in mental health, I know how a mentally ill person should be treated, or any patient to be for that matter. Mm. So when I was in this particular hospital, I just felt that the way things were being done was very different and hostile, to be honest. Mm. I felt that, you know, you had to sort of know your place, you know, and you sort of there was that awareness that, you know, this person is in here is a doctor. And I was very much aware, because I'd worked in mental health as well, so I felt that, you know, the program wasn't stimulating that was there. And it also goes to speak about the fact that, you know, at times the resources aren't as readily available in the public sector than it is in the private sector, where, you know, there'll be a ward program at times and things to be done when you're in the hospital. But, you know, it would be things that are very petty. You know, when you're going to the toilet with the other women and you're showering, obviously there has to be that supervision because you are in a health facility. But, you know, things like asking for toilet paper would be treated in such a ridiculous manner, where the toilet paper was broken into pieces and you go to the security guard there and you sort of, you have to ask, you know, there's no, you're saying, I need the toilet, it's run out of it, you know, it'd be over trivial matters. Those things would be exaggerated. So I felt that, you know, you have to, at times, that sense of dignity or that sense of autonomy wasn't there. And I really felt, you know, discouraged by that and dismayed by it.
Even someone who has been as effective as you has gone out and followed an academic career and became a doctor, and other people who were as qualified and knew of your condition, knew what it implied, you still experience stigma from your peers.
Oh, absolutely. I did feel that way. I think, you know, at times these things sometimes go beyond education, because, you know, stigma is not always about, is not to say that people who subject other people to stigma or people who are uneducated. It goes beyond that. And one can agree that, you know, I expected that people would understand better, know better, but I think they didn't know how to react to me. Others were very supportive, but others really did judge and look down on me afterwards. You know, I felt as if I was ostracized in some way. Mm. I felt as if I wasn't taken as seriously as I was previously. Any credibility I had in my profession or abilities and capabilities as a professional, as a colleague, as a friend, any form of acceptance that I had previously just fell through the tubes after I was seen in that vulnerable state of being unwell, because I feel that people couldn't separate, you know, Dr. Sanke, the doctor, and the person who was ill.
Yeah.
They sort of looked at me differently after that.
You don't say very much of your personal relations, but you speak of your family, how it affects them, how they take care of you, and how when things go wrong, they need to be there. There's an incident that you mentioned when you were younger, that people came and they thought you were demon-possessed. They didn't want to touch the food at home. But you speak of how your faith has been very important in your recovery, in your victory.
Absolutely. It has played a very integral role. And to be honest, it wasn't as easy earlier on in my life, because like I'm saying, this was 2001. I was 14 years old. This was so new. Things related to mental health weren't as openly spoken about as they are now. So at that time, when all these things were happening, because I was saying strange things, people from the church were brought in. They tried to involve people in the, you know, traditionally and so on. And you know, my parents, what I'm grateful for is that they were very open-minded in that sense, because they embraced every aspect of, you know, seeking the help, you know, going to the doctor, embracing my religious life. But at times, people from the church were the ones that rejected me because they said I was demon-possessed, because, you know, there was very little understanding about what mental health related things are. So if somebody's saying these strange things to you, you know, you think it's, you know, it's something because of an evil spirit, which is why there's still such a strong element of stigma. And earlier on, I really struggled to reconcile myself with this God that I'm supposed to believe in and still be called demon possessed. I just couldn't understand why was I this person who demons found a home in. I couldn't make sense of it when I was younger. But as I've grown older and with the support of my friends and loved ones, and my self-seeking spirituality as well, I became strengthened by it, you know, by learning more about God, understanding that it's not a sense of being rejected by God in any way. And I don't have to choose between my medication, my religion. Those things work together in forming who Dr. Sanke is. So I think I used to struggle to reconcile the two things about related to religion and the illness itself, because I'd been called demon-possessed at the time when I was younger.
In conclusion, have you gotten to that point? Who is Dr. Sanke?
I'm sorry?
Have you gotten to the point where you can say, who is Dr. Sanke, as a conclusion?
Yes, I have. And I, of course, we are all a work in progress as people. We still learn ourselves. We still grow. There's times where it was very difficult to understand myself with the illness. But I've come to accept that, you know, my illness has become a blessing in the long run in a way. I'm not saying it's a great thing to live with a chronic illness or you take medication. Mm. But I do feel that I have a platform where I'm somebody who stands up tall, has a mental illness, is a doctor, and says to people who have depression, who have schizophrenia, who have bipolar, to say to them, you can still live a normal life with whatever challenge you have, even if it's not a mental or any other challenge. You don't have to be defined by whatever stigma that or whatever condition that you are living with. It doesn't have to be my defining point. And I think that's why I've spoken up. I said, a mentally ill person is not just the man on the street eating from a bin. It can be an educated somebody. It can be anybody. It could be your friend. It could be your family. You could find yourself in that prison, especially with COVID-19, you know, with deaths happening and people becoming ill and getting depressed. Mental health issues are at an all-time high because of these issues. And I think we need to have an open conversation to say life is not easy. Life is not easy, but we can embrace our challenges with it.
Thank you very much, Doc, for talking to us and sharing with us the insights and the inspirations behind the book. Appreciate it. Good night to you.
Thank you very much.
That was a Capricorn FM podcast. For more podcasts, visit capricornfm.co.za.